Hello, everyone. Thanks for coming back for another episode of Longevity Now, the place for all your news and views of life extension from around the world. This time, we are talking with a self-described regular guy. He might be regular in many ways, but he stands out in the world of healthy life extension, recently rising to number 2 in the Longevity World Cup. Dave Pascoe was not always this healthy. Listen to his story and his methods for turning his life around. And now I would like to welcome to the podcast rejuvenation athlete and biohacker, Dave Pascoe. Hi, how are you doing today?
I am great, Justin. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you on the podcast. You sound great and you look great and you gained some notoriety recently in the past couple of years for having some very good biomarkers and being younger than your chronological age. Now, have you been involved in biohacking for a long time, or did you really just kind of get into it seriously in the last year or two where you're going to start measuring things? How did your journey go?
Well, you know, that's funny. I would say I've been in it for at least the last 10 years, like pretty deep into it. But I've always been into health and fitness. But yeah, within the last 10 years, probably around 2012 is when I started doing a deep dive. And that was because I found out that you could test your telomeres. And I didn't know anything about telomeres at the time. I think I read a blog somewhere or heard it on a podcast. In fact, it was probably a blog because I don't think there were any podcasts back then. And I thought, heck, I'm going to give this a try. You know, I think I'm Mr. Joe Cool. I'm always really into my health and fitness. So I expected my telomeres were going to, you know, come back and say that I had the telomeres of a 20-year-old, right? And I was 50 at the time. But no, to my shock and horror, the test told me I had the telomeres of a 68-year-old. And I'm like, wait, what? what am I doing wrong here? What is it I don't understand? Because this is not good. And so I did a consult with that company. That company doesn't exist anymore, but they asked me a bunch of questions about my lifestyle. And I mean, I knew the general stuff about lifestyle mattered, you know, like sleeping, you know, eating well, exercise. But no, they wanted to know what my day-to-day life was like, which I thought was kind of odd. But I played along and I wanted to see where they were going with this. So I started out saying, oh, yeah, I'm a network security architect and engineer. My job is, you know, super stressful. If there is a breach anywhere in the organization, I mean, it can go from like 0 to 100 miles an hour in seconds flat, right? And I've had to do shifts where I've had to work 36 hours at a time trying to resolve a problem, you know, so it can be, you know, pretty brutal. Oh yeah, I'm training for my first marathon, by the way, which is really fun. And I do P90X as a workout. It's a really extreme workout from the 90s. And oh, by the way, I'm also the sole caretaker for both of my parents who are battling cancer. And they're like, whoa, whoa, wait, stop, wait. Okay, we've heard this before for people who have incredibly stressful jobs, people that are very type A personalities. Well, basically, they're killing themselves with stress. We've seen it before with endurance athletes, distance runners. Their telomeres are shorter because of all the stress that they're putting on their bodies. We've seen it before with caretakers of parents, elderly parents, because of all the stress that that involves. They said, you've got the trifecta going on. You know, you really need to find some mitigations to take care of your stress. And I'm thinking, well, like what? And they said, well, maybe you should consider yoga or meditation. And I started laughing because I'm thinking, oh my gosh, yoga, meditation, those are things I used to do all the time. But because life got in the way and I got so busy, those things fell off the table and I just totally forgot about doing them. But they were right, because I was going from one stress directly to the next, to the next, to the next without anything, you know, intervening. And here I was thinking I was managing this well and that each was a distraction from the other. So yeah, mindset was a huge change that I had to make for my longevity and for the sake of my telomeres, so that they would stop getting shorter.
just
kind.
an aside here, it's pretty amazing that modern medicine, they know stress causes problems, but I don't think they put enough emphasis on that when people have chronic problems
Yeah.
to say, hey, if you de-stress your life in some manner, things are really going to improve. The psychosomatic things within your body, the mind and the body work together, and stress has real physiological effects. That which you obviously found out as well.
Yeah, I mean, they say that about cancer patients as well. If you think of it as a battle with cancer and you're fighting it and you're stressing, that's going to make your recovery that much harder. Whereas if you sort of embrace it and, kind of go with the flow and, get into your zen and stop stressing over it, that definitely helps in recovery.
Yeah, and
So.
then did you again measure your telomeres at a later date after you made a few changes in your life? How did that go?
I did. I started measuring every 6 months just to see like what kind of changes there would be. So, I mean, that first test was my baseline, and that was scary enough. But yeah, so for the first several tests, really not much had changed. Just told me basically that yeah, it's very difficult to move your telomeres once they get to a certain position. It's not something that changes like day to day. It really takes a long time to move them one way or the other. And at the time, there were no such thing as telomerase activators. It took a few years down the road until those were developed as a commercial product anyway. So I remember reading some of the very first PubMed articles about, I guess it was through cancer research, that they found that cancer cells can be immortal. They can live forever because they keep producing their own telomerase enzyme. And it was once they decided or figured out how to synthesize that and make it into a commercially available supplement. I was one of the first purchasers of that. I think it was Bill Andrews was the first one to come up with the TAM-818, which was a very expensive product. But I bought that as soon as I was aware it was available and continued to use it up until actually, I think I'm still running on my last bottle of it right now, but I've retested my telomeres since. I've also done dozens of other things that are reported
Sure.
to
But if we're
use.
focusing on telomerase here and
Yeah. And yeah, so the last measure that I had was they're about the length of a 53-year-old, and I'm now s almost 63.
oh,
So I've really gotten
congratulations. That's
better.
great news.
Thank you.
Yeah. And have you explored any other, have you looked into any other telomerase activators? I know there's a few others out there on the market that make claims that they can do the same thing.
Yeah, there's TA65, which I am a subscriber to also. There's other astragalus, what would you call them, versions of
Extracts.
extracts,
Yeah.
thank you. And like Gatu Kola is another that's supposed to help increase telomeres. Basically, anything that I've found any literature to support it increasing telomeres, I am currently taking. So.
And it seems to have worked out well for you. You mentioned you made a few other changes or added a few other supplements to your regimen over the last, say, several years. Give us some of the highlights of that.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Well, in my 30s, I used to take a lot of supplements. I would walk the aisles of the health food store and just go, oh, this looks good. Yeah. Read the label. Oh, I should probably take this. Not having any clue, right? Whether I needed it or not, or what it was actually doing to me. I was kind of dumb, but I guess, that's just the way we were back then. There really wasn't a lot of testing that could be done. So now I try to be very, very, intentional about the supplements that I take and why, and try to have some sort of idea what it's doing and why. And so that involves, blood testing every month. Because I definitely wanted to know, are my supplements helping me or are they hurting me? Because you always hear from people like, oh, you take a bunch of supplements. One, it's just going to be really expensive pee. And two, you're probably destroying your liver and your kidneys. And that could have been a possible concern. So I wanted to know, yeah, is that real? Thankfully, I found that, through blood testing every month, no, my liver and kidneys are just fine. In fact, a lot of the supplements I take are to help with the liver and the kidney. So that's not a concern of mine at all. But I know there's a lot of people that are just taking things and don't know what they're doing to them. And if you take them in the wrong doses, dosages, the wrong combinations, or even the wrong supplements, you can actually do yourself more harm than good.
And what are a couple of your top picks, would you say, for people listening that you have found helpful over the last couple of years?
Well, to be honest, it was NR, nicotinamide riboside, was one of the very few supplements that I started taking where I found where I felt a profound difference from. And I noticed that when I was doing my P90X workouts prior to taking NR, it was starting to take me longer than like the hour and a half to get through the hour and a half workout. And just didn't have the energy level that I used to have, where I could just knock those things out and be done with them. And I started thinking, well, I am getting a little older. I didn't like that as the reason, right? Or as the excuse, but I was trying to be accepting of my fate. But then I heard on a podcast that I think it was Tru Niagen at the time that came out with this product. Oh, that was the brand named ChromaDex, I believe, was the company that
Correct.
invented it. And I thought, I'm such a skeptic. I'm thinking to myself, well, that sounds like bullshit, but I'll try it, right? I'll buy it and see what happens. Because I do that with everything, really. I try everything to prove it's not going to work. Because I don't really want placebo to come into play. So I tried this, and a few days in, I mean, I didn't feel anything different. Nothing. Until I went to do my next, P90X workout, and the workout went fabulous. I mean, I just crushed it. I got it done in the allotted time, and I had so much energy left over. I thought, well, I want to see where the bottom of this drops out. So I did another hour and a half, workout, and I still had energy to spare. I'm like, oh, this is the bomb. I'm okay. I love this, the supplement. And then, realizing that the science was that, as you age, your body stops producing enough NAD to really fuel the electron transport cycle in generating ATP. And so, guessing that that was my issue, my body just wasn't producing enough of it like it should. And supplementing NR, which is a precursor to NAD, fueled that transport chain cycle and was giving me the energy I needed.
Right, NR, and then any a couple more maybe that you could mention?
So it's difficult. The rest of them, it's very difficult to feel anything subjectively from them, to be honest with you. In some cases, I'm just having to go by faith that they're actually doing something, because the science is usually pretty good, or I can see something like changing my blood markers. But again, I'll take things specifically for most of my supplements are for higher level organ function, right? I'll take supplements for my eye health because genetic testing has shown me that I have three of the same genetic markers for the macular degeneration that my father suffered from. He had both wet and dry, and in fact, he went blind in one eye, and then the other he could barely see at all. And I mean, I know that genetics are not our fate, right? Because epigenetics override those. So I try not to do the things that he did, like the smoking and the drinking that probably contributed. But I also try to make sure that I'm supplementing with things like astaxanthin, zeaxanthin, lutein, luteolin, basically anything that's supposed to be very healthy for the eye and the macula
And your
particularly.
eyes are in good shape.
Yes, they are.
Great.
So I haven't had any experiences yet with macular degeneration. That's kind of a weird story. In my 30s, when I began taking supplements, my eyesight changed. I used to have a terrible eyesight. Even as a kid, I would have to sit in the very front, row of the classroom to be able to see the chalkboard. And I never had glasses, but I needed them. But in my 30s, when I started, oh, well, okay, so in my early 30s, I got contact lenses. And somewhere in like about the mid 30s, when I began doing the supplements, my eyesight improved and I didn't need the contacts anymore. And when I went in to see my ophthalmologist, he was shocked because he said, this doesn't just happen. Eyesights don't like just miraculously improve overnight. I'm concerned that you have a medical issue that's changing the ocular pressure in your eye. So he demanded I go see my doctor and get, like a full physical workup, right? And I'm telling him, no, it's probably just because I'm taking a lot of supplements. And he's like, no, that doesn't work. I'm like, okay, whatever. So I followed his advice, wasted the time and the money to get a full review. Nothing wrong with me at all. And my eyesight continued to be good for decades. And
Well,
now
that's
it's gone back. It's gotten a little worse since then,
yeah.
but
Eventually, you can only battle so much of aging without advanced technology. But that's a
exactly.
good story. That's congratulations on being able to keep your good eyesight for so long. And now you mentioned you have recently been taking targeted supplements, but also doing blood work. And you mentioned once a month, perhaps getting that blood work. And I imagine you do epigenetic testing. You mentioned that. The telomere testing. About how much would you say, just average speaking, you spend on your blood work each month, or maybe if it's a yearly cost or something like that? Because a lot of people are thinking about they might have a certain budget and they might have certain tests where they want to do, and not everyone might be able to do all that you do. But what's the average you would spend?
So I'm probably a little on average when it comes to that. I used to be very cautious about my spending. And I break all this down on my website for people that are interested
Oh,
in stuff
great.
like
Yeah.
this.
Mention your website here, address,
Oh,
so people can check it
yeah.
out.
It's very easy. It's my name, Dave Pasco, PASCOE.net. Super
Great.
easy.
Okay. Well, then
And
they
on
can
there,
check it out in depth. But I mean, I'm just saying, a couple
No,
grand here,
but I just
10,000
wanted
here.
to say basically, there are very cheap tests that you can do that will give you $50 to $75 tests that you can do that will tell you more than what your standard doctor will run as a blood test.
Right, I just got a couple of tests, the complete blood count and the creatine, or no, a C-reactive protein, and that only cost $77. I filled up three tubes of
CBC.
blood, got it tested, and it was only $77, so that is pretty cheap.
And there, that's so that's the CBC. There's also a CMP, which is a comprehensive metabolic panel. And then the two of those together, give you like I think the best, widest picture of your markers. Now you can go, of course, beyond that because there's also NMR lipids test that you can get. You can also get hormones. So if you want to know like with what your testosterone, estrogen, estradiol, DHT, things of that nature, luteinizing hormone, FSH. If you want to know those, that's of course, another panel. That's a bit more expensive.
Isn't that
So
runs a couple hundred, right? Something like
it
that.
does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So usually once a quarter, I will do a full panel from Life Extension, their male elite panel. And that depending on the sales, right? It'll typically run anywhere from like $400 to $600, but an average is around five somewhere. And so I would do that once a quarter to
Okay,
get a.
once a quarter. Okay. Now, you've monitored your blood work pretty intensely over the last few years. How's it trending?
Interesting. You should ask that question because I've recently been not sure if you're familiar with another famous podcaster or YouTuber, Dr. Michael Lustgarten.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's a gentleman that measures everything that he eats and does statistical analysis, complete with p-values, to determine how the foods are impacting his markers. And I've been a big fan of his for a long time. And he and I have done a podcast together where we were going to initially do our blood markers, but we got sidetracked and talking so long that we never did get to it. So we do intend to get back around to doing so. And to that end, recently I've just started graphing all of my blood markers, so that I can see what direction they're going in. And so it took a lot of research and a lot of data from him to be able to understand the pattern and directionality of various markers as we age. And so using that information with the trending lines that I'm having Excel create for me, I'm able to look at and see how many of my markers are going toward the direction of aging and how many are going in the direction of youth. And I was a little shocked to see right now it's about 50-50. So I've got some work to do.
Yeah, I
I
guess if you
hadn't
want to
realized.
really stall aging, it takes
Absolutely.
quite a bit of work. Have you calculated your phenotypic age, Levin's phenotypic age?
I have. In fact, there's a public competition that's going on with that right now. It's called the LongevityWorldCup.com.
Okay.
And for a while, I was, well, it's still in beta. It hasn't even launched yet into an actual the actual competition. I think begins in May. I was leading that competition with 16.6 years younger than my biological age. for about maybe a week and a half until Michael Lustgarten took first place. He is now aging at, I think, more than 20 years younger than his
Ah,
logical age. So he's now in first and I'm in second place.
well, I've got to check that out because I just got a blood test and calculated mine. I'm 18.5 younger.
Oh, nice. Well, you can actually kick me right off the leaderboard. You can steal second place from me right now. So go for it.
Well, and other people, there's a lot of people that listen to this podcast that would be interested in that and comparing, it's and that's a nice social aspect, I think, of things that you want to get done in life. If you get a social group going and
Yeah.
maybe a little competition going, it really helps you stay committed, right?
Absolutely. And this, I
Right.
think, is the type of competition that we want to cheer on each other in. If somebody's
Exactly.
beating us in that, then it's like, yay, I want to be the biggest cheerleader for them ever,
Yeah, what about exercise? Now we talked about supplement and your blood work is doing okay and you look great and you're much younger as far as your biological age goes by many calculations. I noticed you did mention the P90X. Do you do any other types of exercise?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I kind of do a lot. But it depends on the season, I suppose. I'm still doing half marathons. I've given up full marathons because they're too brutal. They're not good for your longevity.
I've heard that, yeah.
I'm still doing half marathons. Although I'll probably end up giving those up too, because that's still more than I would like to do. I think maybe a quarter of a marathon would be more in my
More in
range
the
of liking.
5K to 10K range, that right,
Exactly.
something like that.
Yes. Yeah, that would be better. But for longevity, they say that sprinting or HIIT work, the high intensity interval training, is preferable. And that's actually what I used to do prior to getting into marathon training. I only got into marathons because it was for charity. I run with Team World Vision, and we raise money to build wells in Africa, because on average, like thousands of kids die every day due to lack of hygiene and sanitation, and from the bacteria that's in the dirty water that they end up walking 6 miles on average a day to bring home. So that's a cause that's near and dear to my heart. And I hate running, but I do it because of that charity. But other than that, before that, I used to do sprints with a weighted vest, and I really liked that. I thought that was a much more practical workout because it was allowing me to be able to run fast for short distances. Because really in life, if you have to chase somebody or you're being chased, you really want to be able to outrun them, right? As far as marathon training, however, it's not going to be very often that you're going to have to run 26 miles to catch somebody or run away from them. It's not realistic. So now I'm getting back more into the HIIT work. Recently, a couple of years ago, I bought a Carol AI bike, if you're familiar with that. For the listeners, it's an AI-driven bike that will constantly change up its resistance based on how well you're doing. So for the longest time, I didn't think I was getting any better. In fact, I was kind of annoyed that, why do I suck at this? Why I've been at this so long, why don't I feel like I'm improving? I could get into another long tangent of a story about that, but I found through just accident that my cardiovascular training and fitness was getting so much better. And at the time, I was only doing the Carol bike. I wasn't doing even any of my run training. So it was the only thing I was doing for my VO2 max. And yeah, it made a huge difference. So I'm really impressed with that. And that's something I do every day. I like to do yoga and Pilates, so I'm very much into my flexibility, and balance is another thing I like to work on. I
I
think.
just want to stop you there because that's something people don't realize that you can really keep in shape is your sense of balance and your flexibility as you age. It used to be so many people just like, oh, you get achy joints and you're just not as flexible. There's nothing you can do about it. But I practice balance every day and I do stretching every day as well.
That's
And I
perfect.
find that it really works great.
Yeah, I mean, because if you're only focused on not being sarcopenic, sure, you can develop some good, muscles into your old age. But if you're stiff with those muscles and you accidentally trip over something, if you don't have good enough balance to be able to recover, your balance, and you do end up taking a tumble, you need to have that flexibility so that you don't end up breaking something.
Yeah, there's a chart online you can find. I don't know where it is right now, but I can just mention it for the podcast listeners, where it will tell you your age by how long you can balance on one foot.
Oh, that's
And
interesting.
yeah, and just it's an average marker for most people that once you get up to be 60, 70, 80 years old, you can only balance on one foot for like 5 seconds. But I think like a 40-year-old can do it on average like 26 seconds. Don't quote me on that. But there is a correlation with age. But I found when I practice, and some of my older acquaintances and relatives, when they practice, they get better. You know, it only takes like a week and they're all of a sudden they're balancing a lot better. So, well, tell you what, to wrap it up here, you went through some challenges, got on the right kind of path as far as exercise and supplements to really improve your health. What advice would you give to some of the listeners out there who might be investigating some of this, you know, the rejuvenation athlete title kind of thing?
You know, in watching the people that are on the leaderboard and trying to figure out, like, what is it that we're all doing or that we all have in common that's contributing to the fact of a lower or slower than average pace of aging, I've noticed that we're all so radically different. We all eat radically different diets. We live different, radically different lifestyles. But the one thing we all have in common is that we don't eat processed foods. We
Interesting.
make our own foods from like vegetables and grass-fed beefs and things like that, or be completely vegan, but we're not buying things out of a box or a package. We're also very conscious about what we're putting on our bodies as well as in our body. So like personal care products, making sure that they don't contain, you know, like phthalates and, you know, all kinds of chemicals and things that are bad for you. And there's apps that you can buy that can scan your products and tell you how they fare, you know, if they're like a grade A or they could be a grade, you know, F. It's good to know what your products are what's in your products and what they're doing to you. So eliminating harmful things is the number one best thing that you can do for yourself. But then focusing on the basics, you know, make sure that you're getting proper sleep, good quality sleep, because quite honestly, sleep is the time when your body is doing all of its repair and your brain is trying to do its repair. Your body's always trying to rejuvenate you naturally. And if you're cutting your sleep short, you're shorting yourself of that repair. And of course, having a really good nutrient-dense diet, you know, not just counting calories and making sure that you've, you know, covered your macros, but really making sure that you've got all those micros that you're maybe not aware of. Making sure you're getting all of those, like you're not vitamin deficient. So having a wide range of, you know, leafy greens and vegetables and all the colors of the rainbow is really important. And then just getting out and moving, right? They say sitting is the new smoking. You want to be able to get out and move. You need to, the only way that the lymphatic system in your body ever moves is by muscle movement or getting a massage. So if you think about it, if you're sitting there not moving all day long, watching TV or even sitting in front of your computer at your job, your cellular waste basically that they excrete out of their membranes just goes into this basic lymphatic fluid throughout your body. And your cells are just sort of then bathing in their own excrement, if you want to think of it that way. And so you want to be able to move your body to flush that excrement out and allow your body to do what it's supposed to do naturally. So as long as you do those basic things, you're going to be great.
Oh, that's some great advice, and you are living proof that it works, and people can really change their, you know, health for the better. Well, Dave, good luck in the rejuvenation athlete career that you have, if you put it that way, and in the Longevity World Cup. Maybe we'll all see you there and be competing or congratulating each other someday soon. So thanks for joining us on the Longevity Now podcast.
Thank you very much. This is great being on. I appreciate it.
When I first contacted Dave, he was puzzled as to why I would want to interview him because he is just a regular guy. The reason is because regular people doing effective things to stay healthy and youthful are a great wealth of practical knowledge for everyone. Reading studies and conducting clinical trials is important. but engaging with each other as we find ways to delay the ravages of aging is arguably even more important. Until next time, I'm Justin Lowe.